Welcome to the DevOps Dimension Show. We have a very special episode today with Docker, Patrick. Welcome.
Hey, David.
Hey.
Nice to be back.
Good to see you again.
It's been a while.
I know it has been a while. You're even wearing your Windows t-shirt. I thought, you know, I didn't bring my Docker t-shirt, unfortunately, but I at least have the Docker, you know, on my surface. So
I'm trying
to represent here.
I'm breaking you two up.
Yeah, okay.
I feel like a gooseberry.
Yeah,
like,
right.
From the ops team, I'm Matt McSpirit, keeping these two apart from this situation.
You just need a Linux shirt and it'll be all good. Yeah.
Right. Get the penguin out. Here we go.
All right. So anyway, Patrick, what's your role at Docker now these days?
Yeah. So we used to work together a year ago.
Oh, yeah.
You escaped.
I've been at Docker for a year now. Okay. It's been a blast. I'm working with Solomon Hikes on the future of the platform. And there's been lots of new stuff in Dockerland in the past, even in the past month. So we can talk about that.
Okay. It is phenomenal. I mean, bring us up to speed for those who aren't familiar, perhaps those who've just come from another planet and haven't heard of Docker. Bring people up to speed with just some of the high-level overview of what Docker provides.
Sure. So Docker, the mission statement of the company is to build tools of mass innovation. So that's kind of the very long-term goal of Docker, what we're doing. Now, shorter term, which means 5 years, what we're trying to build is that layer to program the internet. That's what Solomon presents when he talks about what we're building in the next 5 years. And what that means is that when you're programming desktops or mobile, and you know that very well, mm-hmm. you kind of specialize on that mm-hmm. lately, mm-hmm. Or servers, for each new different platform, you need to use different tools. What's happening right now with Internet of Things is that we start to have to program cars and devices and very small things that have sensors and robots. And each of them will have their own SDK and APIs and kind of different programming model. What we're trying to build at Docker is these tools to build distributed systems that let you use a unique layer that is portable, that lets you program the internet. So that's kind of our 5-year goal. Mm-hmm. What we're building today for developers and ops is tools to build distributed applications. And what we mean by that is what you see in that slide here, tools to build, ship, and run distributed applications. That's essentially what we're building these days.
Nice. So take us through some of these in a bit more detail and how Docker fits in with DevOps.
Yeah, sure. Actually, how Docker fits with DevOps to me is one of the things that attracted me at Docker. As David knows, while I was at Microsoft, mm-hmm. I was super much into the DevOps movement. DevOps is really, Volker Will says it really well in his blog. He explains that it's about people and processes as much as it is about tools. Mm-hmm. What was really fantastic about Docker when Solomon introduced it 3 years ago, so it's only 3 years old. He introduced it as an open source project at PyCon 3 years ago. When he introduced it, it was a tool. It was open source, but it was a tool that created a new abstraction that's the container and the container image that represent the perfect artifact for devs and ops to collaborate around. Mm. DevOps is all about devs and ops sharing the same practices, sharing people, like devs becoming more opsy and ops becoming more devsy, trying to build infrastructure as code and all that, and sharing processes as well as sharing tools. And with the container, it's the right abstraction level where when you're a developer, you just use the tools to bring all the dependencies you want in your app, you build all that, you package it as a container, you can sign it so it's secure, and you put that into a registry, and there ops are taking the package that you built on your laptop and they run that in production, and that's the same image that you built on your laptop that get run in production with different settings and different parameters and things like that. But at the heart of it, that's that level of abstraction that gives devs the agility to bring whatever dependencies they want, Which was a limitation of PaaS before, platform as a service. Mm. You had to limit yourself to what the PaaS provided you. Mm-hmm. In Docker, you can bring whatever you want in terms of dependencies as a developer. So it gives developers the agility and the agile workflow that they want, while giving ops the control that they need in order to run that in production, do monitoring, load balancing, and set up everything so that it runs 24/7 without them being called all the time on their pager. So that's essentially what Docker is about, that new level of abstraction that the container represents. That is a very important concept for DevOps, and I think that's one of the reasons why Docker took off. There's another aspect which explains why Docker took off so fast in the past 3 years, which is the move to hybrid clouds. Enterprises. I used to be at Google before and at VMware before coming to Microsoft and to Docker.
Quite the tour.
Yeah. I've been to lots of different companies, and basically in the past 6 years, I've been involved with customers, enterprise customers. Who were looking at that cloud thing. And so initially when I was at Google, we were trying to sell them Google App Engine, which was a pure PaaS. And it's like, you have to rewrite your app and you have to host it on Google infrastructure. And people laughed at me. We don't want that. We want hybrid. Then I moved to VMware with Cloud Foundry. It was still a PaaS, but it was portable. Mm. But still, there was some adaptation. You had to build a cloud native app using a 12-factor methodology. And yeah, there was a little bit more adoption, and actually we can see more adoption of Cloud Foundry today. Mm. But still, it wasn't that big move. And when Docker appeared, I think the level of portability that Docker provides you between inside the firewall and in any cloud, that's one of the things that really attracted enterprises as they were moving to the cloud. And actually, the time when I heard about Docker for the first time is from Microsoft customers. With David, we were involved into customer conversations as part of the DX team at Microsoft. And there was 1 year, I think it was a year and a half ago or something, where suddenly all of them were asking us, what's your Docker strategy? Mm-hmm. How do I run Docker in Azure? At that time, Azure Stack was called Azure Pack. And they were asking, will that run into Azure Pack and all that? And what's the story there? And so I started digging into that. But to me, the portability aspect of Docker is really one of the things that attracts enterprises to it as they are moving to the cloud using hybrid architectures.
Mm-hmm. And it's awesome that it's so integrated with so many Microsoft platforms now, because there's the Windows Server platform in 2016. We're doing a huge amount of engineering work with Docker to make the management experience and the control of containers, Windows Server and Hyper-V containers, just more fluid and agile for IT, and really a better experience for developers as well. Obviously, there's great stuff going on with Linux. There's stuff going on in Azure. There's a whole host of platforms. We're going to talk more about platforms later on and where you can run your containers. But that portability thing is just so flexible. But it's still a challenge for, I think, traditional IT folks to grasp when they've come from a virtual machine background. Mm-hmm. And you've got your virtual machine hat on, and you're trying to think in container terms. Mm-hmm. But that's something we address separately. But
yeah. So I think, I mean, you bring up a good point. I think the reality is that Docker and containerization has made significant changes in DevOps practices, I mean, really across the end-to-end suite. And you know, I know that we have the build, ship, run here. Of course, within each of those categories, there's a number of different DevOps practices.
Yes.
And the things are a little different, perhaps, when you run that in a containerized type of workload. So I was hoping maybe you could kind of walk us through that and give some tips and lessons learned to help kind of our audience out there, so when they kind of come into this, that they avoid some of those things. So for instance, in the build phase, you've got things like continuous integration and automated testing. Like, what are some kind of best practices when you have that in a containerized workload?
So typically I would say CI/CD. I would qualify that as the ship phase. Once you've built your application. So let's start with build.
Sure, build, yeah.
So I'm a developer, I have my laptop and I want to build an app. And maybe that app is in one language or one platform. So I have a Windows laptop and I'm building an ASP.NET application. Mm-hmm. maybe tomorrow I'm going to need to build an application in a different version of ASP.NET. And maybe the day after, I'm going to start to have to use a MongoDB database for it, in addition to SQL Server, and maybe a Redis cache. Oh, that stuff runs on Linux. Oh, there's a Windows version. Maybe I need to install that. And then pretty quickly, I think many developers will recognize the experience there. You end up with a laptop with like 15 gazillion versions of many different things installed, and it's hard to manage.
And it runs so well now.
So you're suddenly like, my 8 gig machine now needs to be 32 gigs.
It takes me 2 hours to log in. What's going on?
And so people have resorted, developers have resorted a lot to VMs to alleviate that in the past few years, like before Docker appeared. I remember Volker was building like huge VMs for our team with everything installed on them. That was really complicated to build and really painful. What Docker does is that it allows you to containerize your development. So basically, you're not obliged to install anything on your laptop anymore with what we call in-container development. What you can do is you specify all the dependencies that you want into a Docker file. You specify all the different services that your microservice application is built on in a Docker Compose file that references several projects that have Docker files. And then when a new developer or you join the project, you just do a Git clone. You clone the project, so you need Git installed. You need Docker installed. And then you need an IDE installed or an editor for your favorite language. Visual Studio is very good. On the Mac, I use Visual Studio Code a lot. And then you just do a Git clone, and Docker Compose up, and it just builds everything. And all the dependencies are installed inside of the container. Now, I'd like to add a few caveats in there. So, for right now, Docker is Docker creates containers based on Linux kernel primitives, namespaces, and C groups. So it's not available on Windows yet. Microsoft has been super active into creating a new backend for the Docker engine that supports Windows isolation primitives, which will lead to Windows containers. So that's in Windows Server 2016 TP4 that people can download today. It's not completely finished. I think it will be finished later this year. But when that comes, basically you'll be able to develop both Linux and Windows applications or microservice applications that use both on the same machine. Right now, what you can do is to build these Linux applications using that. And when you're doing that, what you can do is you specify all the dependencies in your Docker file. And then you mount your source code in a volume. And then you just do a Docker run by mounting your source code in that volume. And inside of the container, you can have tools that compile your code, that run your code. You can debug it from the outside. Steve Lasker gave a great demo at Build of that kind of capability integrated with Visual Studio. So that in-container development, to me, it's really a leap in agility for developers. Instead of having a long README and hours of yak shaving on your machine before starting a project, you just do a Git clone and Docker Compose up. One other thing I wanted to add is 2 weeks ago at Docker, we released a private beta for new versions of Docker for Mac and Docker for Windows that make that super easy to do that in-container development on Mac and on Windows. And these versions, the current version of Docker that's called Docker Toolbox, when you download it on your laptop, uses VirtualBox, which has lots of limitations in terms of volume mounting. Docker for Mac and Docker for Windows are built on native virtualization capabilities of the platform on which they're running. So on Mac, it's using the hypervisor framework and a project called Xhive that we heavily modified, and it's deeply integrated with the network and file system of the native host. On Windows, it's based on Hyper-V, and so it's leveraging Hyper-V. It's setting up the network connectivity so that it's easy. For example, when you're launching a container, instead of guessing the IP of the VM, you just go to Docker into your browser, and your app will just show up there. And for volume, it's using Samba mounting for that.
Nice. Yeah. So on the Windows side, that's to clarify as well, that's Windows. Will it run on Windows Server and Windows Client?
So this one is running on Windows Client, Windows 10, Pro or Enterprise, only the versions that have Hyper-V in them.
And do you need to enable that in advance? Or
you need to enable Hyper-V in there before installing it.
There you go, good tip.
Beta.docker.com, it's a private beta, so you need to sign up for a waiting list, and we'll open it up more as we get feedback from developers. That's really fresh from the press. That's 2 weeks old.
Yeah, nice. Okay. Makes sense. Okay, so that's some good input on the build side. What about when we move to ship?
Yeah. So when you move to ship, here what you want, ship is really where devs and ops are working together. So to me, that's really the heart of DevOps. Typically, what you need to do there is once you've tested your app locally and you run it in containers and all that, you just check in your source code, and typically, you, the developer, you don't push that to production. Maybe what you're doing is that for testing, you can provision Docker engines in the cloud. So people are using Docker Machine for that. That's a tool that we're shipping with Toolbox and with Docker for Mac and Windows. That has a new Azure driver that Ahmet Balkan created. The new Azure driver is only 2 weeks old as well. Lots of action in that space. I really love the new driver. He added a bunch of options that make it super easy to interact with Azure. Basically, it's a one-liner, one command line. You specify your Azure subscription, some of the ports that you want to open and all that. And what it does is that it creates a VM in Azure that has Docker Engine pre-installed. And you can create what is called Swarm clusters. Swarm is our orchestration engine. So you can create several VMs for testing at larger scale if you want to do load testing or things like that. And so Docker Machine is a tool that developers are using for testing their app in the cloud when they want extra capacity, like beyond their laptop. Now, the next step is they're going to want to push that to the ops to go to production once the tests have run.
Yeah, or a staging environment or
something
like that.
Staging environment. So for that, they would use a CI/CD pipeline. So there, it really, I'd say there are lots of different offerings in the industry. So Visual Studio Team Services is a very good option from last week at Build. VSTS announced that they have now a Docker extension that lets you, as part of the build for your app, that lets you push the result of your build as Docker images into a Docker Hub or your own registry. So there are integration with Jenkins and with lots of other CI/CD systems. So typically, you have your version control system that's tied to a CI/CD system that does your build and testing. And there are lots of offerings in there. Most of them have been integrated with Docker nowadays. And at the end of that process, once all the tests passed, what happens is that your image that has been created gets signed. And that's one of the best practice and recommendation that I have is you want to take security into account end-to-end from the dev to the ops. On the Docker side, we have a technology that's called Docker Content Trust that allows you that's using a best practice from the research area that's called TUF that allows developers to have keys that have been assigned by ops to them to sign their images, and then on the ops side they can check before running images that they have been signed by developers. I highly advise. There's a great demo of what that means, and what Docker Content Trust can do for you at the last DockerCon EU. You can watch the video. It's the second day keynote, I think, where two of my colleagues plays the dev and the ops, and so Anand plays the dev, and so he signs his image, and then. And then by mistake, he commits his private key on GitHub in a public repository.
Oh, dude! Ops fail!
He comes to see our ops, which is Diogo, our responsible.
That wasn't an ops fail, that was a dev fail.
A dev fail!
Ops is going to save the day.
That's right, ops is going to help.
Just calm down there.
And then Diogo, our ops guy, instead of hitting on him, which he was very tempted to do, says, no problem, and then I'm just going to revoke your certificate. And so it gives you, Docker Content Trust gives you that revocation capability without like redoing the whole distribution of keys and all that.
So cool. Obviously not checking in your private key in GitHub is a really thing
that's
you don't want to do.
But what
would be, like, why sign at all? Why should I care about signing my?
Because one of the important aspects of containers is that what you're running in production is really what the developers create on their laptop. And one of the goals of Docker is to avoid the kind of issues that happened before where, hey, it runs on my laptop. It doesn't run in production. We have no clue about all the steps that happen in between. So here we're really talking about supply chain management for the software supply chain. So we're trying to automate that, but make that usable. We call that usable security, and I think it's a very important concept. DevOps is also about people and processes, and the people aspect is very important. People make mistakes. The tool should just let them create processes that let them remediate these mistakes. So that these are the kind of usability enhancements that we're trying to bring to that global software supply chain that we're building here.
Okay.
So that's the ship piece. So once you're done, you're shipping at the end of your CI/CD pipeline. You have a bunch of Docker images that you ship to where? So there are many options.
Production, the cloud. Yeah.
No, first it goes through what we call a registry. Yeah. So there are many options there. There are a lot of commercial registries. There's the open source registry by Docker, so you can set up your own. We also have a hosted registry in Docker Hub or Docker Cloud. If you sign up for Docker Cloud, you can have a private registry. That's pretty good. Startups like that ability to just pay for private registries. Enterprises, they want to have their own private registries, either hosted in the cloud, but where they manage the infrastructure, or inside the firewall. So at Docker, we have something that's called Docker Trusted Registry. That's part of our Docker Data Center suite. And that's a registry that is that has access control. It's tied to Active Directory and LDAP. It's really focused on the enterprise use case, and it's integrated with Docker Content Trust.
So this is essentially similar way where an enterprise would store their images for use.
Signed images for deployment. Yeah.
So they sign their images, they store them in there, they version them, they label them. Once they're in there, you need to go to production.
Right.
And this is where the handoff between devs and ops happen. Now that you've packaged your application with a compose file explaining all the different services in your application, you also have specified all the dependencies that go in the image in that Docker file. Ops can take that compose file that you have for development and parameterize it. And then they're going to say, oh, maybe on your local dev laptop, you're mounting /users/pat/mymongo database, local directory where for my Mongo test data. In production, I don't want that. I'm going maybe to deploy that to an Azure cluster of 1,000 servers, maybe 1,000 nodes. And I'm going to talk to a Swarm manager who's going to position it somewhere. And then there needs to be a directory where my data is going to reside. And so there comes the pluggability of Docker. So at Docker, we have that philosophy that says batteries included, but removable, which means that for subsystems like networking or volumes, we offer a plugin API. And there's a whole ecosystem of people who have built plugins for us. So for example, for multi-host networking, when you're deploying an application that needs its own network, inside of a cluster of 1,000 machines, we have a built-in driver. But there are like 6 other drivers that you can choose from Cisco or Weave or other companies who have built drivers for Docker. And I think the Azure team is working on one as well. I'm looking forward to have this one, actually. So that's for network. For volumes, there are, I think, 4 or 5. EMC has one. Flocker has another one. And there's a bunch of others, volume plugins. And so as the ops, you're saying, oh, I'm going to look at your compose file, and OK, I'm going to add environment variable to put constraints, for example. So the Docker orchestration solution is called Swarm. And in Swarm, you can specify, you can specify affinities and constraints. So you can say, that database, I want it on a different host than my web front end. And the web front end, I want five of them. And the database, I want it on a node that has SSD. And so you can specify, just put that on a node with label SSD on that. So you can specify all these constraints as environment variables. You can also specify a network. You can in the new version of the Compose format that's from 2 months ago, version 2. Now you can specify volumes and networks directly in the Compose file. And so your local network that you're going to use on your laptop may be very different from the one that your production team is going to use. So your production team may take your Compose file and start like using one of the network plugins and maybe assign like fixed IPs to your containers and things like that. So basically the story here is that we really try to give agility to developers and the control to ops that they need in order to run that in production and trust that that they won't be called in the middle of the night. So that involves lots of aspects that they need to look into. Yeah. So when you're putting containers in production, you need to take a look at load balancing, how to configure that, service discovery that's tied to load balancing as well. Logging, monitoring are really two important aspects. And there's a whole industry of Docker integration. So for example, in Docker Engine, the log manager is configurable. So there's a bunch of plugins for that as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's definitely a bigger cliff for production, right? You mentioned a bunch of things, and then, of course, including a highly available cluster of some type that you run your containers on. And
high availability, very good topic. Yeah. Actually, I played with that recently on Azure, because you must know that the Azure VM scale sets went GA, I think yesterday.
Yeah.
I've been very excited by that because to me that's VM scale sets associated with Docker Swarm. That's kind of the winning combo. So Azure, for example, when you want to go production with containers on Azure, Microsoft has a service called Azure Container Service that by default lets you choose between Mesos and Swarm. At Docker, we have a solution that we sell that's called Universal Control Plane, Docker Universal Control Plane. That's based also on Swarm, but that we support and that has a UI and that's really designed to manage containers at scale. Recently, I took one of the ARM templates that Ross Gardler and his team built, and I adapted it to deploy Universal Control Plane on Azure, and it's using VM scale sets. What I'm excited about with this is that we can go to the next level of automation in terms of production deployment with that, which means that with VM scale set, you're able to say, if this metric goes above that level, please provision other VMs. So I'm not sure which metric I'm going to use, but it could be tied to the type of applications you're deploying or maybe the amount of RAM that's left in your cluster. So you just plug that into Azure Resource Manager and you just let it know, hey, have a probe on that. And if that metric goes over that threshold, provision other VMs for me and it's all auto-configured.
Yeah, there's a lot of things. So you mentioned service healing, but there's a lot of different things here. I mean, where do you see things headed, like in general in the industry?
Yeah. So, what we've seen the first year was kind of the industry discovering Docker and reorganizing completely around it. The operating system shrinking to just run containers in the data center. Everybody creating an orchestration story. All the logging, monitoring tools integrating with Docker and all that. So that was the first year. Second year was really about Docker being adopted for dev CI/CD scenarios, dev and test. So that was the main type of usage that people had in the first year. What's been happening this year, what we're seeing happening is Docker is maturing, the tools around it are maturing, and this year is really the year where people are going in production with that. So we see lots of customers either buying UCP or evaluating different orchestration engines, looking at how that integrates with cloud infrastructure. I think it's going to be a big theme. Docker maturing is going to be a huge theme this year.
So kind of the integration points across the tool chains, you've got a lot of options now, and trying to weave through those can be challenging. So starting to see some of those come together to be a little more seamless for doing a lot of the things that we've mentioned up to this point in the interview.
Yeah, there's more and more integrated product suite that are being born that really help enterprises adopt Docker for hybrid cloud scenarios.
What you might find as well is, as we go closer to Windows Server release and beyond the Windows Server release, more and more people who perhaps traditionally wouldn't have used any kind of container type technology or management solution will start to kick the tires. You know, so you might find this next generation of new...
There's the latecomers, right?
Yeah, that are welcome. Still gonna be, it's a lot of IT pros out there like me.
Actually, when you're saying the latecomers, there will be the early adopters, but in the Windows world. I was at Build at the Docker booth last week, and I had tons of people coming to us and asking, okay, we're running Linux containers already, but we have a lot of .NET workloads. When is Windows Server 2016 out? And I told them, just go ask people.
That's not me.
But then you'd whisper to them.
I think Docker for Windows containers is going to be huge. That's really going to change the equation, because that means for enterprises who typically have half Java, half .NET, they'll be able to containerize all their workloads and to use the same tools to manage both Linux and Windows containers. That's going to be a very big thing this year. And then you were talking about the future. I think one of the things that I see at a longer horizon is what is called unikernels. Docker acquired a company called Unikernel Technologies a few months ago. And these guys are really fantastic. They worked heavily on Docker for Mac and Docker for Windows, like doing some deep systems engineering. But at the base, unikernels are library operating system. So it's kind of the next stage into the container into the continuum between VM to containers. I think unikernel are kind of where that's going. There, when you're building your app at build time, instead of building an app that makes system calls to a general purpose operating system like Windows or Linux, you're reducing the operating system into libraries. So that's what the unikernel team is doing. So there's one library for file system access, another one for networking access. And once you've reduced it to that, when you build your application, you just link only the libraries from the OS that you need. And the output of the compiler is an OS image that you can run either on bare metal or virtualization or inside a container.
Very small.
So that's very small. That's more secure because you don't take all the baggage from the operating system. You have only the bits that you need. You can do a bunch of optimization at compile time. So I think that's really a very interesting future trend for containers where you will see it's really the micro in microservices. So microservices are going to shrink more and more.
Well, you've seen that, of course, with even Windows Server, right? Going all the way down to Nano Server, even removing the, Windows name. So, I mean, how would you say, like a Nano Server, and obviously there's a lot of flavors on the Linux side of the world that are similar in footprint to a unikernel space, like, you know.
So you should add that question to your colleagues at Microsoft. I know there was a Microsoft...
That's Mrs. Nova.
Yeah, there was a Microsoft research project doing unikernel for Windows. I don't know what the status of that project is. I just know that
that's the direction in the industry that things are headed. I mean, so how can you streamline, make my microservice really small, really agile, scale it out, you know, as opposed to back in the day where it was add more RAM, add more processors, get this big honking machine and see what it can do, right? I
mean, Nano is down to like 450 meg for a relatively minimal install, but you've still got storage, networking, everything in there. And yes, containers individually on top will be relatively small additions, but what Patrick's talking about there is independent entities.
Yeah, 400 megs, that's huge. Oh, yeah.
I know, it's too big for most of my USB sticks.
Yeah.
So your applications become like really small specialized appliances that do one thing well and use the hardware very sparingly. Yeah. So it's kind of the maximum of efficiency you can get out of your silicon.
But to run it on bare metal, do we assume that there will have to be some evolution in silicon to run these things, almost like a hypervisor for VMs today?
So you could compile it to an image that would run on bare metal today.
Right.
Obviously, you'd want to have several of them. So it depends on what kind of bare metal you're running it. If it's on a Raspberry Pi, it's okay.
But
if it's on a big honking server, maybe you want to have a virtualization.
We'll have a million on that, just one.
Okay.
Utilization zero. 0.00001%.
But running them in containers is also an interesting option. So Docker is all about tools of mass innovation. That means we're taking technologies that are from the future and we're trying to democratize them for everybody to build applications and to be innovative.
Yeah.
We've done that with Linux containers. We're trying to do that with unikernels as well.
Cool. Okay, awesome. So what are some final tips on maybe some resources or next things you might recommend people to go and do?
So I definitely check out the beta.docker.com for the latest Docker for Mac and Docker for Windows beta that we announced 2 weeks ago. Another good resource is docs.docker.com and DockerCon as well, which is our big conference. DockerCon is coming out in June in Seattle. Mm. So if you're around, just take your tickets. It should be a pretty fun show.
Cool. Awesome. Thanks so much, Patrick.
Yeah, great. Really appreciate it. Thanks for having me, guys.
Yeah, totally.
It's good to be back in Redmond.
It's good to have you. All right.